This is Brock and Salk
from the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com and the 710 Seattle app.
All right, this hour brought to you by Tackle.com, T-A-K-L. That's Tackle.com, Brock and Salk here on 710 ESPN Seattle. And as we do every Tuesday, or at least every other Tuesday at 9 o'clock, we talk to Jeff Passan today from Yahoo Sports. He joins us in the Venue Kings Hotline. Good morning, Jeff. What is going on? Jeff. We need to chat, Mr. Blankets. How wet or dry are you on the Mariners, who were just half a game out of first place today?
Well, the Mariners have done a wonderful job of beating two teams that are on historic paces for losing streak or for losing. So
don't be
in that regard.
Don't be like that. Come on now. Everybody has I'm prepared for you today because everybody has to play those teams. And don't you dare. The AL West is the best division in baseball.
You said to Salk last week, don't be that guy 2 weeks ago. You're going to bury the Angels. And you said to him, don't be that guy in June. Don't be that guy, Salk. And we're going to say, Jeff, don't be that guy. This team is trending towards 103 wins. Don't be that guy.
Okay, let's get this out of the way. Do you think the Seattle Mariners are going to win 103 games?
No.
What? Then don't be that guy.
Why couldn't they? Why couldn't they win 103 games? They're on pace. They're halfway through the season. You joke and say they're only beating Baltimore and Kansas City, but they play all these same wretched teams the rest of the year.
Oh, and listen, I agree with you. All I'm saying is we're at the point now where the Mariners are getting very close to locking up a playoff spot. I'm dead serious about this. I think we have a pretty decent sense of what the American League playoff field is going to be like at this point. And so while I am interested in the Mariners' win total, just as I was when they won 116 games and got knocked out in the first round, I'm more interested in how they fare against the Bostons and New Yorks and Houstons and Clevelands of the world.
Okay.
Because I think that is the more imperative and indicative measure for them right now.
All right, well, they beat up on Cleveland at the beginning of the year. I know Cleveland wasn't quite Cleveland yet, but they beat up on them when they had their chance. They split with Boston and Seattle, dropped 2 out of 3 in Boston. They got swept by the Yankees in New York, where the Yankees are essentially the perfect baseball team, and they haven't played them yet in Seattle. Well, I think the Yankees will look a little different in Seattle than they did in New York. So, I mean, I don't know that I look at them and say that this pace is impossible, especially when they'll continue to play the Angels and A's and Rangers throughout the back half of this year and all the other sort of garbage teams out there.
The American League West is the best division in baseball.
Well, statistically, it is.
Yeah, statistically, it is.
Statistically, it's the only division with four teams above 500. Their last place team has the best last place record. I mean, all these other divisions stink.
Yeah. If you want to call me a wet blanket for saying the Mariners are going to make the playoffs on July 3rd, that is well within your right. There is nothing wet nor blanketish about that, though. All I'm doing is saying I'd love to see this team go out and wreck shop against elite teams the way it does against teams that are on pace to lose 110-plus games.
Jeff Passan with us from Yahoo. How about we frame it this way? If there's 30 teams in big league baseball, where's the Mariners' roster sit? As it's constructed today with its rotation and Eddie Diaz, the best closer in baseball, and what they're still capable of doing 1 through 9 on any given night, where do you think they sit of the 30 teams in baseball?
Did you just slip the Eddie Diaz, the best closer in baseball, so I could, like, gloss over it while I was looking at all the other things you talked about?
Yeah, kind of did. But please don't tell me he's not the best closer in baseball right now. I mean, he's the best closer right now.
He's not the best closer in baseball right now.
Who is?
Come on, Brock.
Who is?
Who is? I take Kimbrel over Edwin Diaz.
Ooh, I don't know. This year?
Yeah.
Really?
I'd take Kimbrel over him. I'd take Chapman over him. I mean, I know this is going to make your guys' head spin. Sean Doolittle's been better than Edwin Diaz this year.
Yeah, I'm not answering that. We're just going to move on. We're just going to let that sit out there and wait. The sound you hear instead of us responding is the sound of your email box blowing up or your Twitter feed with all the angry Mariners fans who are going to be coming after you.
I have absolutely no problem standing up for that argument right there. Sean Doolittle's allowed far, far fewer base runners. He's got a 46-3 strikeout to walk ratio. He's blown fewer saves. I mean, Edwin Diaz, I'll tell you my thing with Edwin Diaz right now. And to me, it's the single scariest thing when it comes to the Mariners. Edwin Diaz leads Major League Baseball in appearances, guys.
Yeah.
Like, are they running through him? I mean, are they tiring him out? I really feel like the management of Edwin Diaz in the second half is maybe the most imperative thing for the Mariners. And the fact that they have this cushion right now does help and allows them to be a little more conservative with him than they've been.
Have you not watched Nicasio and Colomé?
Yeah.
Have you not seen how good they've been?
I'll tell you what, and I might be out of my mind here. I think Juan Nicasio is going to have a really good second half.
Ooh, I hope you're right. Well, I hope you're right on that. So let's not get sidetracked. If there's 30 teams.
But I want to make this point because I feel like this point's important. And I talked about Sean Doolittle's strikeout to walk ratio. Juan Nicasio struck out 41 guys in 33 innings. He's walked three and he's given up only four home runs. Those are the peripherals of an excellent relief pitcher.
Yeah.
So don't lose faith in Juan Nicasio.
I'm not disagreeing with you, but when you watch him pitch and you see the amount of hard contact, it's hard to see it like that, like the stats show, but I get where you're coming from with that. We've been trying to have a conversation this morning, Jeff, and Jeff Passan from Yahoo Sports joining us here, about the core of this group, because heading into this year, I think most of baseball was sort of in agreement that the Mariners had an aging core. They had decided to give it one more go with Felix and Cruz and Cano and Seager and sort of that core group. And so everything when you were thinking about them at the trade deadline, et cetera, it was all about, okay, that core and what's around it. When you look at them today, Cano's been out now for more than 40 games and has another 40 to go. Seager has been terrible at the plate. He's been great in the field. And Felix has been a sub-replacement level player. Do they have a new core? I mean, do we have to start looking at them as a young team instead of an old team? How does Jerry DePoto look at the quote-unquote core or where they're at in their window when he approaches the trade deadline this year?
Who's young on this team?
Haniger, Zunino.
No, Haniger's not young. Haniger's 26.
Well, I mean,
right?
As far as young, it's club control. I mean, they've got another five.
Haniger's 27. If your young guy is 27 in baseball, you're not young. This is not a young team. This is a team that is unquestionably built to win now.
How about a controllable team? As I look at this, Jeff, right? I mean, you're right as far as youth goes, and you watch the Braves last night, and you know we watched the Houston Astros in this division emerge with young 20 guys. But what about if you spin it and you look at it from a controllable standpoint that everybody is controlled into the 2020s?
Oh, Cruz isn't.
He's the only free agent after this year. Felix, obviously, the Mike documented. After next year, you've got a club option in 2020. Outside of that, Haniger, Zunino, Healy, Gordon, Segura that you locked up, Seager,
Leek, Gonzalez,
Hamill.
Yeah, I mean, the team is fairly controllable here for the next 2 to 3 years.
It's funny when I look at this team, just looking at the players who they've got, just looking at the roster, I don't see a team that's playing 650 baseball, and yet they are. Mm-hmm. And so I think it would be foolish of me. I made this mistake with the Phillies and with the Giants in some regards, giving up on a core that has won too early. At the same time, the Phillies and Giants both suffered some pretty wretched years after that core got old and got old in a hurry. And both have struggled to pull themselves out of that because they didn't yank the ripcord early enough. So So I think the story of the Mariners going into the 2020s is going to be balancing this roster that has won right now with a roster that projects to win in the future. Hmm. And I'd be lying if I said I know how to do that. I'd also be lying if I said I thought Jerry DePoto was going to have a successful team with all of the roster baiting that he did this year. And it was pretty incredible to see the number of deals that he's made and the way that they worked out. I thought at the beginning of the season that this is nothing more than a compendium of guys who are like the odd puzzle pieces from other teams that you're trying to make into a cohesive puzzle in Seattle. It has worked, and it has worked like a charm. And I'm still, part of me is still dubious because of the run differential and because of the tally of one run victories and all of the things that tend to be indicators of a team that's in line for regression. And yet here we are more than halfway through the season, and they are on pace to win 103 games. And there's something very undeniable about that, because those are wins that are booked, and they're almost two-thirds of the way to locking up a playoff spot in terms of victories at this point, with nearly half of the season left to play.
So when that happens, Jeff, what do you attribute it to?
I don't know. I don't, like... I wish I had a good answer for you there.
Can chemistry or camaraderie play a factor?
No, because chemistry and camaraderie are simply stem from winning. Like, I think anybody who's played sports knows that there can be chemistry and camaraderie, and that those things can play a factor. But before that, there needs to be some kind of sign that this chemistry and camaraderie are going to give you that extra boost. That extra boost is necessary and is worthwhile and is going towards something. I don't feel like chemistry and camaraderie get you victories. I feel like they're what victories are attributed to once they happen.
Okay, I'll give you another C word. Actually, my father-in-law, an old baseball player, pitched for the Ducks. Highlight of his career was striking out Reggie Jackson with the Sun Devils way back when. His word was coaching. He's like, you have to look at the coaching of this group. And I'll give you two guys in particular, D. Gordon, and Salk and I were talking about him before the show today. Like, his stats, he's a 650 OPS guy. I mean, that's what he is. Yep. That's like replacement level OPS. But what they ask of him to do in focusing on what he can do, not what he can't do, has been enormous. Marco Gonzalez. They have coached him to be a totally different pitcher than what he's been in the past. I mean, he's changed his game. Can coaching be an enormous part of this, asking guys and playing to what they can do instead of focusing on some of the things they can't do?
You know, I think the Gonzalez is a better example there, and I think that that's absolutely fair. It's as much knowledge of the game, I think, as it is coaching, because – The coaching aspect in baseball to me is more psychological than anything else. A lot of the developments with pitchers these days come from the analytic side, where you say, you know, a ball spins like this, maybe a guy would be better if he tried this. And the coaching part is convincing someone that he's capable of doing something that he might not think he can do. Yep. When you overhaul your repertoire, this is something that's gotten you to the major freaking leagues. You've been successful with it, level after level after level. High school, college, rookie ball, low A, high A, double A, triple A. Think about all those places where guys have been successful before getting to the big leagues. And you're telling me that you want me to change things up now? Like, how ridiculous is that? Well, obviously it's necessary. And convincing D. Gordon that not only does he need to play center field? But he can play center field and can play at an elite level. And oh, by the way, Robbie Cano just got suspended. Can you move back to second base, please? Doing all those things without there being an outward iota of complaints, to me, is one of the great things that the Mariners have done this year, and something that deserves a lot of credit. I don't know if that's coaching. That's just good managing right there. And I don't mean by Scott Servais necessarily. I just mean leadership, and there's been good leadership there this year.
Let's talk some names for a few minutes here to finish this off. Jeff Passan of Yahoo Sports, and you can read him there and check out the podcast, etc. But as we creep up here on the trade deadline, what, about 4 weeks to go, we know the Mariners are going to get a bat for the stretch run in mid-August when Robinson Cano returns. But other than that, give me some names. I mean, we've heard a few in the last couple of weeks. We've heard Cole Hamels' name, Jay Happ's name pop up. I heard somebody mention Zach Duke yesterday as a potential lefty reliever. Personally, Brock and I think have talked a lot about the need for a wipeout righty reliever to come face, you know, the really good power right-handed bats that are going to be in the contending teams from the American League. Any names out there that you like for this team that you think are a good fit?
Juris Familia. I mean, if you're talking about a power righty, a guy who's got a big fastball and an even bigger splitter. And I don't know if the Rockies are going to sell because the National League West is still pretty wide open and they've underachieved pretty badly, frankly. But Adam Ottavino is a guy who's going to be a free agent and who I think has the ability to be as good of a right-handed matchup reliever as anybody out there. And you haven't heard his name a lot. He is someone who would be absolutely perfect in that role and someone on whom I really do wonder if the Mariners are going to target, because he gave up a couple runs his last outing, but he's been as dominant as any relief pitcher in baseball this year otherwise.
You know who else would be perfect for your Yahoo Baseball podcast? Mike Salt.
All right.
On a holiday week. I know how holiday weeks go. I know
you. Why are you laughing like that?
Fit.
You know, it's possible that I could come on and talk baseball with you. You're not the only expert in the world, Jeff.
I am the furthest thing from an expert, but I take it really well, so it's great.
Best thing about Adam Ottavino, by the way, he's a switch hitter, so if they need him in one of those National League parks to pinch hit, he can hit both righty and lefty. So not only can he get righties out, but he can pinch hit late in the game if you really need him.
How do you know Adam Ottavino is a switch hitter? Did you just look at his baseball reference page?
No, this baseball reference page? Jeff, how dare you? I'm an expert, all right?
Baseball reference page.
Yeah, pretty much. It's baseball reference page. I wanted to see how much what his salary was, because when you're looking at these Mariners, essentially everyone you look at, they don't have the prospects to deal. So it's always, okay, who can they buy? Who has an overinflated? That's why Cole Hamels is so interesting, because they might be able to get him for less because they'd be willing to just deal with the huge amount of money he has owed.
You know, that's actually a really good point. And Hamels, I don't think Hamels is going to cost all that much in prospects. I really don't. He's, you know, the only thing, not the only thing, the best thing that Cole Hamels has going for him is how few decent starters there are on the market. And I think Happ is probably going to go to one of the contenders that has prospects. And I wonder where, like, Tyson Ross ends up. And you're going to hear Chris Archer's name. I don't think he goes anywhere, though. I just think that Hamels is a name brand. He is somebody who has pitched and pitched very well in October. And in the grand scheme of things, he's probably a number four these days.
Yeah. Well, that may be exactly what this team needs. All right, last thing. It's July 4th tomorrow. I'm torn on how you're going to answer this question, because on one hand, you're an elitist like me. On the other hand, you're from the Midwest. So this could go in any direction. How do you feel about fireworks at home? I'm not talking about going to a big fireworks show like I'm going to go to tonight at Safeco. How do you feel about idiots at home lighting off their own fireworks?
Okay. I have never personally, like, bought, you know, like, the fireworks that could take off a hand. Like, I've never Jason Pierre-Paul'd myself.
Right.
But down the street a couple years ago, one of my neighbors did. And we wound up drinking a little bit too much that night and found ourselves shooting off fireworks at, like, 2 a.m. And I got to be honest, pretty freaking awesome. So if you're asking me, fresh act or tired act, I'd say fireworks at home, absolutely a fresh act.
All right.
And maybe that, like, I don't necessarily consider myself like I know I grew up and I live in the Midwest, so I probably should consider myself a Midwesterner.
No, you're a self-hating Midwesterner. Like, let's be clear.
I'm like a liberal in the Midwest, though. So there's not a lot of us out here.
You're self-loathing. It's fine. Jeff, we understand.
Down the fort so you coastal people can live the kinds of lives that you want to.
All right. We got to get out of here.
Happy 4th of July.
Seriously, have a great holiday, and we'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
All right, boys, be safe.
All right, there you go. There's Jeff Passan, who joined us on the Venue Kings hotline from Yahoo Sports. And I'm reading all the hate here on the text machine, 710-710, powered by Coors Light. There's plenty of it. Wet blankets, and why does Jeff hate the Mariners? And, wow, didn't know you guys were interviewing the patron saint of pretentiousness today. This Yahoo guy's a real Yahoo. This guy loves his own voice. I think this guy thinks he knows more than he does. This guy stinks. This guy's a jerk. I can't stand him. Why are you talking to this guy? We love Jeff. We find Jeff to be very entertaining, and he's got his own take on it, man. Don't hate. Jeff's a really interesting dude, and I would honestly recommend reading his book, The Arm. It is one of the better baseball books that you will read. Jeff's an excellent writer. He is a really smart guy, even if he's unwilling to open his eyes to the idea that the Mariners might actually be pretty good this year.
I think it's great to have differing opinions.
Absolutely. Don't you get sick of us just constantly talking about how great everything is all the time?
No.
Oh. No?
I love listening to you all day long.
Thanks, Howdy. I'm glad you're out there to be a fan. Do you like Jeff?
I love Jeff Passan. I love people who just constantly can't be entertained by anything.
What do you
he
mean?
Just can't be impressed at all. His whole life, nothing really impresses. That's why I love Keith Law so much. Nobody in baseball is any good.
They are cut from the same cloth in a lot of different ways. Text message, Jeff is a pompous second-rate baseball analyst. He's not second-rate at all. Jeff's one of the best out there, man.
I just like that Jeff Passan is self-aware enough to know this is who he is.
Yes. That's the point. Like, it's one thing if you don't know that's who you are. Jeff recognizes it. He's running towards it, not away from it.
That's right.
That's what I appreciate so much about him. All that being said, I think a lot of his ideas are insane. And it was not that long ago that he was on this show saying, oh, the Mariners, you really think they're going to win 90 games? Well, now it's still 103.
I don't know. I don't see a 90-something win team that they're putting out there on the field.
Well, they've got how many wins right now? 54? They got to win 36 more games the rest of the year to get to 90? Yeah, I would be willing to bet that that's going to happen.
Really?
Don't you me, Jeff. That's enough. How dare you? I think that they're going to get to 90 games, 90 wins. Do I think
I don't
they're going
to be like Mr. Doomsday or anything?
I don't know if they're guaranteed to get to 100, but the longer they go at this pace, the better a chance they have at getting to 100. It was funny talking to Tom last week about whether or not the Astros are somebody that you can legitimately catch, and all of a sudden, you win a couple more games against Kansas City, who stinks. The Astros lose a couple games in Tampa. Tampa turns out like they might actually be decent. And the next thing you know, this thing's a ball game again. So I don't know whether they can catch the Astros. That pitching staff is still, it is so, so good. But you know what? A couple injuries here, another couple injuries there, some bad luck here and there, and you are right there with the ability to do so more than halfway through this season. So
the Mariners are just a lucky team.
That's true.
They're pure luck. They're pure luck.
Why can't we get Astros rant guy on the phone with Jeff Passan? Nothing would be more fun than that. That would be my ultimate. We still got you guys hanging on the phone. Brock has taken off, so I would love to chat with everybody who is waiting. Got a one line or two open at 206-421-3776. Talk some more Mariners. Did want to point out Cam Chancellor essentially announcing yesterday that he is done. Danny Davamore with a really cool interview coming up this afternoon. They're going to talk to Dan Quinn, Falcons head coach, and of course, former Seahawks defensive coordinator. Knows Cam about as well as anyone. Dan Quinn, always a great interview, so he'll be on with Danny Davamore today at 5 o'clock. Get back to some of your calls, and we'll keep talking some Robbie Cano. Do you miss him? It's all next here on Brock and Salk.
From the Alaska Airlines Studio,
this is Brock and Salk.
Streaming everywhere at 710sports.com.
I'm sure there'll be plenty of time to answer this question and answer the question, Jared, but this is the biggest 4th of July song. I'll be playing the whole group of them tonight at Safeco. I'm going. The problem with this one is that it's a protest song.
America. America was founded on a protest, Saul.
Fair point.
You could argue there's nothing more American than a protest.
Well said, Lydia. I'm kind of partial to John Mellencamp, R-O-C-K in the USA.
Tribute to 60s rock.
Yeah, I'm partial to that one. They usually do that, too, at the fireworks night at Safeco. So that would be way up there on my favorite. There it is. I like John Mellencamp. I like Paper and Fire.
Pink Houses?
I like him better after, like, Jack and Diane and Pink Houses. Like, the John Mellencamp years more than the John Cougar years.
That's
this is
fair.
A great song, though. And they do it really well at Safeco. Are you going tonight?
I am, yeah.
Have you been to the fireworks night for July
3rd? I have not.
It's awesome. You're going to love it. I'm excited for you to experience it. My kids are... Cecily's already practicing covering her ears. We're ready to go. She will be asking all night from the moment we get there about the fireworks. And then when they come, she will be terrified of them. I can't wait.
So they're probably going to start at what, like 10, 10:30?
Yeah, I remember last year.
Is she going to be hanging for that?
Yeah, they did last year. It was a really short game last year. And they had to wait basically like 25 extra minutes for it to get dark enough to do the fireworks. So hopefully it'll be a normal length game tonight for them. Of course you would like John Mellencamp, Mike, says a texter. I don't know what that means, but yeah, I guess I do. I like John Mellencamp.
Could have guessed.
We've had phones kind of buzzing all day on Robinson Cano and kind of two things that we've gotten to today. And the first was just kind of a different way of looking and envisioning the Mariners and where they're at in their window right now. And I think the popular belief heading into the year was kind of this is it. This core is being given one more opportunity to go out there and win before at some point you just have to declare them a failure as a nucleus. And, of course, talking about Felix, Cano, Cruz, and Seager. And how many years can you have that group together, fail to make the playoffs, and still consider them to be a core? Well, at some point, it goes away. The oddity, though, and credit to Luke Arkins, who we talk about often here, our buddy from Prospect Insider, at Luke Arkins on Twitter, who was writing even at the beginning of the year, yeah, the real core is not that group. And as you look at them play today, who's the real core of this team? It's Haniger, Segura, Paxton, Diaz. I mean, those four guys for sure, and then Zunino and Gordon are sort of the next two. That's your core. Zunino and Gordon get leadership points, even though neither of them are hitting well. The rest of that group has really been the core. And then you throw in guys who are locked up long term, like Lee, Gonzalez, Healy, Gamble. And all of a sudden, you this thing turns. And instead of being concerned with those four players, they become more the ancillary pieces. Felix is gone after next year. You got one more year left on Felix's deal, and then that's it. Seager is still a productive player, even if he's having another down year, you know, at the plate. Nelson Cruz is more than productive. He's still hitting like a center of the order guy, hitting fourth. That's fine. And so really, the only guy with a long-term deal that is problematic at all is Robinson Cano. We'll see what happens when he comes back and what kind of player he looks like at that point. So I just start kind of turning the lens on the Mariners, and all of a sudden it changes what you do at the deadline. It changes the way you think about them in their window. If it's not closing but, in fact, actually opening, yeah, I can see them in a completely different spot, and maybe Jerry Dipoto is able to go out there and find another pitcher or two, both a reliever and a starter, maybe two, who can help them not just for this year but moving forward as well. The other question that we brought up is just, do you miss Robinson Cano? And Brock on the other side of this saying, no, not really, never finds himself missing him. I do. Yeah, I'll be real clear. I do. I miss Robinson Cano. I miss watching him play. I enjoy him. He's one of my favorite ball players to watch. I love the smoothness he plays with. I love his swing. And I miss the numbers. This team has not hit all that well. Robinson Cano's a really good Hall of Fame type of hitter. Yeah, he's only had a couple seasons in his career with an OPS under 800. He's legit Hall of Fame bat that they're going to be adding back into their lineup in August. Yeah, I'll take that every single time. 206-421-3776. Who's been hanging on? A couple guys have been hanging on over an hour. Taylor's in Lewiston, Idaho. Taylor, go ahead. Thanks for hanging on, man.
How's it going, fellas?
Great.
I do not miss Robinson Cano one bit. I cannot stand the way he just doesn't hustle for his teammates. Like, as a baseball purist, as a teammate of a player who's done that before, it really made me hate that person that doesn't want to run to first base for me. And think about how many times he's grounded out to first and second and how many double plays he could have beat out. A run might have scored. You know, I just think it's embarrassing that we put that much faith in a guy who really doesn't seem to care sometimes.
Geez, I don't know if I see it that way at all. And you're right, when he was hurt, he wasn't always busting it down the line. But the great thing about Robinson Cano has been how many games he plays every single year. I mean, you look at his career, and until he got injured this year, every year, 160, 159, 161, 160. I mean, that list goes on and on.
Didn't
and
he play
even in
like
his
a
mid-30s,
double sports hernia?
He played through a double sports hernia for half of a season. And you got to question hustle and his desire to win. I'm sorry, man. That's a guy who is preserving himself for the long haul. And I know that everybody loves players that are gritty and bust it down the line. But you know who most of those guys are? Mediocre players who find an ability to get that much out of their talent. Robinson Cano is a superstar hitter. A superstar hitter who is still playing in his mid-30s because of that.
But look at D. Gordon. D. Gordon hustles down the line every single
and
time.
And D. Gordon is not a superstar hitter. D. Gordon is honestly, looking at the numbers, a bad hitter. And I love D.
This
Gordon.
This year, right now.
Right now, D. Gordon is a bad hitter. He's got a 646 OPS. He's got a 302 on base percentage. Just out of curiosity, do you know what Robbie's on base percentage was when he got hurt? Anybody want to guess?
360.
385. That is a major difference, and oh, by the way, Robbie also adds power to that. And that's not a shot at D. Gordon. I love D. I love all the things he brings to the table, man, the running, the defense, the pressure, the leadership. There's a million great things about D. Gordon. But Robinson Cano is a superstar hitter. I try not to forget about it, even though I understand there can be some things that are frustrating about his game. 206-421-3776. Sam in Woodinville, been hanging on forever also. Good morning, Sam.
Hey, morning, guys. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Do I miss Robinson Cano? Yeah, I miss him. I'd miss him a little bit more, you know, if we were losing. But my problem is the Brian guy who called earlier and a little bit of what Brock was saying. It was just about the team chemistry thing. I'm not buying it at all. the guys already played through injuries. That's something that teammates can get behind and already have gotten behind. We had a winning record when he was here. He's not the Melky Cabrera type of guy who's got suspended before and, you know, has a bad attitude. He's not a Milton Bradley type of guy. He's a good guy.
Yeah.
Great energy, great positive attitude. So that's kind of the point I wanted to touch on.
It's funny you bring up that name. Do you know who Robinson's best friend was when he was young coming up in the Yankees organization?
I don't.
Melky Cabrera. And the story I remember hearing at the time, I can't confirm this, but the rumor that I remember hearing is that the reason the Yankees dealt away Melky is because they wanted to separate the two, that they knew Robinson Cano was Hall of Fame type of talent, and they didn't want him going out at night with Melky Cabrera every single night. And that was why they ended up moving on from Melky, and that at that point, Robbie sort of started to get it and kind of fell in line behind Jeter and the rest of those guys on that team, and that's sort of how he really became Robinson Cano. But it's funny that you bring up Melky Cabrera there. Kevin's in Squim, been hanging on forever also. Kevin, good morning.
Good morning, guys.
What's up?
Hey. I had a take on Robinson Cano. I don't personally miss him, but that's not because I didn't enjoy Robinson Cano. I think he's an amazing player, obviously. I think anybody would be silly to not think that, and I don't have a problem with his hustle. I think he's just protecting those quads and hammies and all that good stuff. But the big thing with him, I think what the Mariners have to do, because they do miss his bat occasionally, they just plug him right back in. At second base, if he takes a couple games to get back to be in Robinson Cano, so be it.
Yeah, here's the problem with that, though, Kevin, because I'm with you. I want them to get his bat back in the lineup. But you're just going to put him at second base every day, move D. Bill Gordon back to center, and then what happens when you're in the playoffs?
You move him back.
You just like no problem?
First place. No problem. He didn't seem to have a problem the first time. I don't see why he would the second time after he's had this many games to, practice, if you will. I just don't see the issue. D is leave him with everything. I think it just builds the legend of D. Gordon if this team goes into the playoffs and it's successful that he was able to bounce back and forth. We get those extra wins that Robinson Cano will bring us in the 20-something games he'll be back. And, you replace Yamo Correa with Robinson Cano for 26.
Yeah, that's an upgrade. I know people – look, and I love Guillermo also, but it's still an upgrade to replace Guillermo Heredia, who's not a very good hitter, with Robinson Cano, who is a great hitter. Like, I know we sort of kind of get lost, we get caught up in all the things the Mariners have done and squeezing every last drop out of this roster, but Robinson Cano is one of the great hitters in baseball. Guillermo Heredia is hitting 230. He doesn't add any power. Like, this is your apples and oranges. I love the defense too, and I'm not saying that it's not valuable. It is. But what you can still do with other guys in center field, whether it's Mitch Haniger moving over or moving D. Gordon back to center at times, I still think you can get a lot of that productivity and still have Robinson Cano's bats in the lineup. So fun conversation. Good job, Kyle. It's a great question that I don't think is going away anytime soon. A lot of emotion, obviously, behind the whole thing. All right, let's finish this up. It's a midweek holiday for us tomorrow, July 4th. And with that in mind, we are ready to answer your question. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. You know this works. Any question on any subject in the whole wide world, we're ready to answer them next. I'm Brock and Salk.
This is Brock and Salk. Answer the question, jerk.
Keep asking questions. Come on, I'll answer them. Come on, I'm here. I'm going to answer your questions, dang it.
Answer my question! The question, jerk!
Well, don't just stand there. Answer the question, jerk!
All right, let's finish up our day by answering your question. 710-710, powered by Coors Light. That's how it works. You text us, and we got an answer. Brock has taken off on us. He's got a little something to do. So, Lydia, Kyle, howdy. All in the building here answering questions with you. Who's going to answer the most questions? Probably Howdy. I'll just elbow everybody off the mic.
Yeah.
Yeah, we know that. Jerks, which is better, the best burger you've ever eaten or the best brat you've ever eaten?
I'm going to go with the best burger.
Yeah, I don't even think this is a debate, is it?
On average, I'll take a brat on average because really? I really enjoy that. Yeah, but the best burger is really good.
Now, when you say a brat, do you include all sausages in that or just specifically a brat?
I include all sausages that you put in a bun.
Oh, so you're using brat and sausage essentially interchangeably.
Yes, but it has to be put in a bun. It can't just be like something that you just
cook. I gotcha. But like, I don't actually like brats that much. I like Italian sausages and some of the other, like, every time I get a brat, I'm like, I feel like I should like this more, and then I don't like it that much. Prefer Italian sausages, but burgers destroy that. It's not even close.
You could just dress a burger so well.
So many different things you can do, and the cheese and the bun and the different toppings. Come on.
I'm going to go a little bit of pepper jack and provolone cheese. I'm going to go some crispy onion straws.
Oh, I like that call. Crispy onion.
I'm
going to
do fried egg, barbecue sauce, ketchup.
Fried egg is good.
And cheese curds.
Oh, howdy.
It's pretty intense.
That's three different types of cheese you got on there. Wow. Speaking of which, what is your favorite dessert to eat on the 4th after you eat one of Howdy's giant burgers with an egg and three types of cheese?
You can't eat dessert
You're too
after
full.
That burger.
You just have another burger. Favorite dessert for the 4th? Is there a special 4th of July dessert?
I go traditionalist apple pie.
Yeah, but apple pie is much more of a fall dessert than a summer one.
But it's also very American.
It is, but it's a Thanksgiving thing. Much more, I mean,
when we would be back in the Midwest, they make a lot of things with Jell-O, whether it was like an American flag Jell-O mold or a lot of things with like strawberries and whipped cream, like any
like
type
a strawberry
of dessert,
shortcake?
Like a strawberry shortcake or like I feel like the red, white.
Don't sleep
on
a strawberry
there.
Shortcake. That's real good. Throw some blueberries on top of it to create the full blueberry effect, red, white, and blue. Yeah, I'm in on that. I mean, ice cream's usually a good call. Hard to go wrong with ice cream.
Yeah.
Next question.
Jerks, I'm running out of walls in my house for Walls for Wins. Is it wrong to go to a home design store and take a picture of their walls? How do you feel about Walls for Wins?
It's supposed to be your house. That's the thing.
I had to look up how to block the hashtag. Very annoying. Completely meaningless.
You don't care for Walls for Wins?
No, like, no, not in the slightest. No.
I just kind of get the sense, and maybe I've
representative fallen, of nothing.
I've fallen victim to this also, where everybody's trying to come up with, like, that thing that goes along with the Mariner season, and there's Walls for Wins, and there's this, and everybody kind of wants that one thing that goes with it, and yeah, it's fine. I'm okay either way. I just missed the Mariners last night. Can they come back tonight, please?
They probably will. They'll probably come back like twice, three times.
They need to.
Win by a run.
That's what they do. Jerks, the city
Next
of Bellevue
question.
Has a $1,000 fine for lighting off fireworks, but you live where you can shoot them off over a lake. If you were to shoot them off at your party, would it be, and then get fined, would it be okay to ask your guests to chip in and pay the fine?
No.
No, thank you. I can't get away from your party fast enough. Not only are you going to light off stupid fireworks with almost no enjoyment for me, but now I've got to pay for it? Get out of town. See you later, brother. No way.
Yeah, well, I mean, what, do you go over that ahead of time? Hey, guys, I'm going to light off this bottle rocket, but everyone here's got to commit to paying $100.
Yes, you better say, your party better be the best party ever. You have a lot of faith in your party if you're willing to charge me for your fine.
I have to pay $50 or $100 to go to a house party.
Right.
That would be something else.
Out and out. No way. Hard pass. That's a hard pass. Jerks, what is the biggest fireworks you've ever bought?
Hard pass.
I've only bought them at the TNT stores that like pop up at the Safeway and the QFC and stuff. So I've only bought this like octagonal shoot things up in the sky and explode. It's not anywhere close to what you can get on the reservations.
I've never spent one dime on a firework in my entire life. Maybe one of those, what are the things you throw at the ground? The snapbangs?
Poppets.
Poppers?
Poppets.
That's about it. I don't even think I've ever bought them. I've used them. They're kind of stupid.
Those are kind of fun.
Eh, not really. Not really. They're really not that fun. They're overrated like everything else about fireworks, other than going to a big fireworks show where professionals do it right.
I love getting to explode my own stuff. I don't get to explode things except for one day a year. I get to blow things up.
Oh, get over yourself. You want to be pyro. Get out of here. You whatever you're blowing up at home is terrible. Trust me. It's not good.
Next question.
You think it's good, but it's not. Of course you'd never bought a firework, Mike. Yeah, of course not, because it's dumb.
I just feel sad for you.
Whatever. I my life is great. Don't you worry twice about me.
Oh, man, that is frustrating and dishonest.
Jerks, do you put ketchup on a hot dog? I mean, not after the age of 10.
Me and Bob. Yeah, we do.
Ugh. Children.
Ketchup and cream cheese.
Children.
That's fine.
Mustard, man.
Russell Wilson does the same thing.
Grow up and start using mustard.
I don't believe in condiments, so nothing.
Zero. Zero condiments. No mustard. You don't on anything.
Mm-mm.
No mustard, no mayonnaise, no ketchup on anything at all. Fries? You don't need fries.
Yep.
You don't need fries at all?
No, I do eat fries.
You don't dip them in anything.
They're so good by themselves. Why do I need to dip them in anything?
Often they're not that good.
Fried potatoes.
You would not get along with my daughter, Avery, who sees everything in the world only as a potential vehicle to eat ketchup. And often we've had issues in the house where we have to tell her, Avery, stop taking the spoonful of ketchup and sticking it in your mouth.
Well, that I respect.
That's disgusting. Ugh. I kind of get a little like queasy thinking about her just eating ketchup. Oh. All right, should we get out of here? I guess so. Have a great 4th of July. 4th of July is a really cool holiday, man. I love it. It's one of my favorites. I love big fireworks shows. I love everybody celebrating America. Love that it's about middle of baseball season. Love that the weather is great. Barbecues. So many things I love about it. So can't wait for tonight. I'll be over at Safeco to watch the Mariners and Angels. Huge series. Chance to continue to bury these Angels. Cocky Wade LeBlanc on the mound tonight. Looking forward to that. Fireworks afterwards. Be back in here Thursday morning. 7 a.m. with Brock and Toe. Until then, the hay is in the barn. See you, everybody.
The Mariners are just a lucky team. They're pure luck. They're pure luck.
Seattle is alive for the Mariners.
Guys, are the choppers!